It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. Live it off the wall. Where you give the best sports talk and info in New York.
I got a special treat for you this evening. A young man that you all know is Joe the Policeman from the What's Going Down episode of That's My Mama. I want you to put your hands together and welcome him to the stage. Big round of applause for Jackson Heights' own
Mr. Chris Shan.
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Shan.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Off the Wall, the podcast version here on YesNetwork.com. Now, the blog version of Off the Wall hasn't really been updated since the Yankees won the World Series. That's laziness on my part. I apologize. And, you know, I usually write when I get angry at things. You know, something has to spark my Italian and Irish blood to start to come together. And the Giants have done that this week. Now, we're going to hear from my partner, of course, the godfather of YesNetwork.com, Joe Auriemma, in our next segment. And I'm sure he'll get on me for this. But whatever, it is what it is. The podcast is better when there's a little heat coming out of me and then when Joe piles on later. So having said that, you're going to want to stick around for the next couple of segments. It should be a good one. We start today with the New York Football Giants. As I said, this team is full of talent. Everyone knows that. Think about the guys they have on defense, the guys they have on the offensive line, the receivers who many thought would be a dud but turned into a pretty good group, pretty good targets for Eli Manning. They still miss Plaxico Burress. Big time. Now, I was thinking a lot about this team from the time of the game-winning field goal against the Falcons to now, and I have to tell you, the talent aspect of this team relates to the amount of talent the New York Yankees have on their squad. The difference between the two teams, though, is the production between the lines. It drives you absolutely crazy as a fan. Now, if you're a Giants fan and you were blindfolded with earphones on so you couldn't hear anything, like you were contested on the game show 21, and someone told you in your ear, whispered, the Giants have a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter, would you worry? Would you think the game is going to go to overtime? Or would you think the game is over? Giants win. Now, conventional Giant fans that know this team from past Giant teams would say, game over, Giants win. Wrong. Went to overtime. And if they didn't win the coin toss, they wouldn't have won the game. Defense could not stop Atlanta. They're lucky they won the coin toss. Now, I said this when they were 5-0. And I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. But the way this team was winning, now look, they destroyed Tampa 24-0. They destroyed the Raiders 44-7. What are they supposed to do to these teams? They're supposed to destroy them. And I screamed that I wanted like a game of 30 or more points from the offense, and I got it with the Raiders. Scored 44. Should have been 51-0. But I digress. Now, my partner thought I was wrong, but I did see some chinks in the Giants' armor back then, and now that they're playing the rougher part of their schedule, teams are seeing this video, and they're attacking those weaknesses. Now, is it because maybe guys aren't playing at 100%? Maybe. Antonio Pierce has been playing injured for the past 3 weeks. He was out after the bye because of that injury. Is it because their offensive coordinator drives you to drink and drink gallons of moonshine with his play calling? Is it because Lawrence Tynes is the league's leading scorer, and he isn't really that good of a field goal kicker? Or is it because of their defensive coordinator, Bill Sheridan? Oh, there's so much to talk about. Let's break it down, piece by piece. First, the guy's not playing at 100%. Justin Tuck admitted in the bye week his shoulder wasn't 100%. I give these guys a gold star next to their name. The guys that play hurt, I know there's some people out there that say if you're hurt, you're just hurting the team by playing. Not in football. Football, you always play hurt. Saturday, Larry Hebert, a senior at Yale, was out there with a club on his right arm playing against Harvard. You put it all on the line in football, and I'm in the camp that if you're hurt and you could walk, you could play. So I give kudos to all those guys that are at 100% and are still out there busting their gut, because they are. That secondary is decimated by injuries. It's a regular who's who every Sunday when they drop back into coverage. And the loss of Kenny Phillips is still being felt exponentially. Now, moving on to the offensive coordinator. if I have to see the run and shoot one more week, I'm going to throw up. Because that's what it is. That's what he's running. It's the run and shoot. What happened to this team and play action? They don't have a good running game? Brandon Jacobs stinks? When he's not limping off the field every 5 seconds? And Joe will bring that into play later. Watching the game with my entire family of Giants fans on the day of my daughter's first birthday party against the Falcons, we sat there in amazement. First and 10, running play, 6 yards, 5 yards. Even Ware was in the game getting 6 and 5 yards. So on 2nd and 4 and 2nd and 5, and I would call it before the huddle was even broke, I guarantee you they're in the shotgun. Shotgun. And they run that stupid inside handoff that worked 2 years ago when you won the Super Bowl. Guess what? People have plenty of film on that. Plenty. Shotgun. 2nd and 4 and 2nd and 5. Buddy Ryan, as Joe and I have said countless times on this show, punch this guy dead in the face. I'm talking about Kevin Gilbride. In case, you know, you're under a rock, you don't know who the Giants offensive coordinator is. And I had a living room full of people that wanted to be in the line, like that scene from Airplane where the lady was going nuts and everybody was in line with a different tool or gun or bat wanting to beat the hell out of this guy. Punch him in the face. It drives me out of my mind. Kevin Boss, as Joe told me, 5 catches, 2 touchdowns, 76 yards against the Falcons. 5 catches isn't enough. He needs to be used more. Why isn't the tight end used as much as the tight end used to be used? It drives me absolutely up a wall. Can we bring back play action? Can we start playing Giants football again? Please? Letting the run set up the pass. 2nd and short, 3rd and short. You have the horses. Use them if they're not hurt. Lawrence Tynes, look, I understand. At certain times, when you drive down the field, you need to get 3. You can't go for it. You can't do other things. You have to kick a field goal. It's part of the game. I'm not saying I want the Giants to score every time they go down the field, but it's been like this all season long. And, you know, my opponents might say, well, they're 6 and 4. Exactly, they're 6 and 4. The biggest win they've had in 42 days, they didn't have a win. And the biggest one is against the Falcons, and they nearly lost that game. Now they got the Broncos out in Denver. And depending on when you listen to this, it'll be over and I'll look like even more of an idiot or I'll look more like a genius. I don't know. But they have to beat the Broncos, who are now in a tailspin. Since starting 6-0, they haven't won a game. So they're kind of in that same boat the Giants were in until they beat the Falcons last week. And their defense coordinator, Bill Sheridan, you know, for the most part, I was running around watching my daughter that day because no one else wanted to. It's her first birthday. A lot of kids running around. I got to protect her. So I didn't really see too much of the defense. When the offense was on, I kind of parked it on the couch for a little bit. So I'm not going to talk about something that I really didn't see. So I'm going to let Joe start the second segment with Bill Sheridan. All I know is what I saw on the offensive side of the ball, and that was the fact that Kevin Gilbride, if I had moonshine available, I probably would have killed myself drinking it. And I think that's a good place to wrap things up here on this first segment. When we come back, Joe and I will probably get into it about the Giants. What else is new? That's next on the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com.
Go to YesNetwork.com for the best Yankee blogs on the web. It's The Blob with Bob Lorenz, Keeping Up with the Joneses with Kim Jones, The Pinstripe Bible with Steve Goldman, River Ave Blues, and much, much more. For wall-to-wall Yankees, it's YesNetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
So, they say Michael Corleone this, and Michael Corleone did that. So I said, yeah, sure, why not? Big Frank Pantangeli fan, by the way.
That was pretty good, actually. That's the guy that slits his wrists in the bathtub.
Right, yeah, Frankie Five Angels. He's actually, he's the guy that took over Clemenza's crew. And Clemenza died of a heart attack
right.
between 1 and 2.
Right.
Although it was a money dispute.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. A little Godfather, I'm quoting,
yes,
money dispute.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so you... You know,
I went off. I did my thing.
Kevin Gilbride.
Kevin Gilbride. So you give me the defensive side of it.
Well, all I'm going to say is Bill Sheridan is no Steve Spagnuolo.
Well, obviously.
And, you know, from what I'm hearing, they're saying that a lot of the guys think that he's smart. He's a smart guy. But he's not smart enough to, at the end of games... You know, let teams just drive down the field on the Giants and adjust. This guy doesn't know how to adjust mid-game.
On the fly, yeah.
On the fly. The other thing is, and I'm going to, you know, give credit to Howard, is Howard Cross said to me earlier in the week, you know what he's doing? All game, they're applying pressure to Matt Ryan. They're applying pressure. And Michael Boley was on Tony Gonzalez. And you didn't hear boo from Tony Gonzalez all day. You didn't hear anything. Boley was all over the field, played an unbelievable game. Then at the end of the game, instead of attacking, continuing to attack, which Spagnuolo used to do, where he used to just continue
like,
to go
at it. It was like a Jim Johnson run
just
Eagles
continue
defense
to go at
where Spagnuolo grew up.
What the defense did at the end of that game is they let the players make the plays in front of them. And that's the problem. So Justin Tuck now, instead of Boley being on Tony Gonzalez, he had Justin Tuck on Gonzalez.
With a bad shoulder.
And guess what? You let a defensive lineman go back into pass coverage, that's a problem. That's where the problems occur. These guys should be attacking the quarterback, rushing the quarterback, and they're back in coverage. And Tony G burned the Giants on that last drive.
Scored the game-tying touchdown.
Burned them. And they let the Falcons get back in that game. And don't even get me started on red zone defense. You want to talk about red zone offense, okay? The Giants are last in red zone defense. You get to the 40, there's almost a guarantee. If the opposing team gets to the 40, it's almost a guarantee they're at least going to score a field goal. They get to the 30, yeah, they're scoring a touchdown. That's what it's become with this team. They're good when you keep the opponent on the other side of the field. Who isn't? But when they let these teams march down the field, I mean, there is a colossal breakdown in the way the Giants play defense against opponents when they get down the field. And they start driving on the Giants.
Here's the question for the Giants right now. Now, I still think they can make the playoffs. Regardless.
I agree.
And despite how I went off in the first segment, I still think they're a playoff team. However, here's the question that I pose to you and everybody else out there. Is this a team that makes the playoffs and makes noise? Or is this a team that makes the playoffs and is out in the first round?
Well, the ultimate Giant guy, positivity guy, Joe Callow, of course, said, you know, the Giants. The Giants.
That's spot on, by the way,
a couple of years ago, all right? They were 10-6, and they were playing bad like this. All right, enough of the Callow impression. But
yeah.
They were 10-6, and they were playing like this in November. And they went on to win a Super Bowl.
It's also a different team.
However.
It also had Plaxico Burress. And Ramsey's Barden is still on the bench. Now, I know he might be still coming along, in quotation marks. Throw the kid out there when you're in the red zone.
I got to tell you, though, this receiving core is the last thing I'm worried about. Nix is playing well.
No, I'm not
Smith.
Saying that they're not. I'm saying
you want a little
if you're having red zone issues, throw the kid out there. Make a little package inside the 20 for this kid and just throw the ball up there. All he's got to do is catch it. He's 6'6".
That might be a problem, though, right now. That might be why.
That's fine, but at least give him a chance. I'm not there at practice. He might drop it. You know, he might be from necessary roughness. Don't throw it to stone hands. But at least give the kid a chance. If you're that bad in the red zone offensively, why not? Nothing else is working for you.
Yeah, and Chris, you know, you mentioned before, look, the Giants from a couple of years ago that went on that unbelievable run, mm-hmm. they had all of the talent and all of the pieces in play, and they just needed confidence. This team has issues. Spagnuola is not there anymore.
Right. It's a totally different team.
How do I put it? I mean, they're not the same team. This isn't a team that just needs a confidence booster. This is a team that needs to work on a lot of stuff.
Now, the Giants are a team, if they beat the Broncos, they control their destiny. At 6-4, even though they went through the four-game losing streak, Joe, sitting here right now at 6-4 before this Thanksgiving night game against Denver, they control their own destiny. The next 3 weeks, if they win all three games and start playing Giants football again like they should be, they're going to be 9-4, and they'll pretty much have wrapped up the NFC East.
Which is a weak division this year. It's unbelievable how the Cowboys just, all of a sudden, that offense can't score.
And that game against Philly, I'm really starting to think that was an aberration. Like, I'm not trying to, I don't know what the Giants ate or drank the night before, but that was an aberration. Because Philly hasn't played like that all season.
The Eagles, yeah, are not that good of a team. And you know what? You're right. They do control their own destiny. Right now they are on the outside looking in only because the Eagles have the tiebreaker against them. But, you know, they've now beaten Atlanta, a conference opponent that was right there with them record-wise. And they go out to Denver in a winnable game. Denver's in a tailspin. This thing could be, you know, blown wide open. And the Giants, you know, if they take care of their own business, will be in a good position.
Look, I'm asking for a lot. But if you beat Denver, Dallas, and Philly, okay, and you end up 9-4, if, it's a big if, but if it happens, your last three games are against the Redskins down in Washington, who have a good defense, but let's face it.
Yeah,
they can't score. They got Clint Portis out with a concussion now. Liddell Betts tore his MCL. Mm-hmm. That team is a mess on offense.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Then you have Carolina, who I thought was having a little bit of a renaissance and starting to play like they used to play, and then they go out and spit the bit last Thursday.
Well, don't worry about it. They're going to continue their role by beating the Jets this week.
Well,
who I'm officially dunning.
We'll get there for a couple of minutes in a second. But then you have Carolina, as Joe said, and then a game against Minnesota, which will probably mean nothing to the Vikings at home, which they'll probably maybe play Brett Favre for the first half and then coast. Unless they have a number one seed with home field on the line, which they might, and they might have to play because, you know, the Saints may or may not lose a game up until that point. And if both teams have one win going into that last week, yeah, it would be for the one seed, and then they would play for it. If not, that game means nothing. So you're looking at potentially the Giants able to win. They could run the table here. Conventional wisdom tells you they probably won't the way they've been playing, but they can run the table. They could end up 12-4.
They could. And look, that would...
But they're not going to.
They're not going to. And that would be a really big confidence booster going into the postseason. But to me, Chris, a couple of years ago, the Giants went through Tampa Bay in Tampa. They went through Dallas.
In Dallas.
In Dallas. And they went through Green Bay in Green Bay. Now, the difference between this run and that run is, to me, there's no dominant teams like there are with the Vikings and the Saints.
Plus, no Spagnuolo. Plus, no Plaxico Burress.
The Vikings and the Saints are phenomenal. I'm a Giants fan. And I kind of feel like right now that's going to be the NFC matchup, the Vikings versus the Saints. And look,
if the Eagles fullback is running for nearly 100 yards against the Giants defense, what's Adrian Peterson going to run for?
Minnesota might be the most complete team in the league. They might be. They might be. And the Giants just don't have that air of confidence, and they don't have... I just don't think they have the personnel like they did a couple years ago. They have talent, but I don't think they have the personnel like they did a couple
years ago. It's okay to be a Joe Callow and be positive, and it's okay to be me and say, you know, they could be 12-4 and they could run the table if they had any pride, if they had anything left in them, and if they had, you know, an offensive coordinator and a defensive coordinator who would get their heads in the game. Look, I didn't play football, but I played a little bit in high school. I didn't play in college. But you know what? I'm allowed to have an opinion, and I'm allowed to talk about it. At least I'm straightforward and honest in that respect. I have sat and watched football my entire life, especially this New York Giants team. I know what this team runs like when it wins. And I obviously, through the Dave Brown, Danny Cannell years, and Kent Graham, know what it's like when it loses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This team has always had a good defense, always a competitive defense. They were never able to get there because of their offense during those Dave Brown years. But now, they have the offense, and now the defense, I don't think it's because of personnel. I think it's what Joe and I brought up earlier, and I think it has to do with the sideline.
I do, too. I think the coordinators have a lot to do with it. I don't know what else to say. I just think that at least the Giants are in a position where they can make the playoffs.
No, they are.
As opposed...
Nice segue.
...to the New York Football Jets.
I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
How long has it been since you've heard the word Sanchez?
Not in a while. I haven't heard that Sanchez stuff in a while. Look, finally, Rex Ryan came out this week and said he didn't throw, you know, wave the white towel and, you know, throw it into the ring, which Rocky should have done with Apollo Creed, but he did kind of say, we need to take accountability, and so does Mark Sanchez need to take accountability for the way that he's playing. And there was really Sanchez, you know, went week to week, came out with his speech that he wrote in the shower, and didn't really fess up to anything, didn't take the questions, didn't take the lumps from the New York media, and didn't say, you know, I did this wrong. I'm throwing off my back foot. Those guys are breaking their butts out there, and I need to work. Yeah, it's rookie lumps that I'm taking right now, and I'm going to continue to try to get better only for this team because we're still in it. And Rex Ryan said this week, finally, we need to make him understand that he needs to take accountability for the way he plays, and that's something that he hadn't done all year.
And that's something, especially in this area, that's something that you had to do. And I was talking to some Jet fans, and they were telling me, you know, maybe it's time he gets benched, but not for the rest of the season. And don't tell him it's not for the rest of the season. Just say, look, you're playing like you know what, you're sitting, you're done. Go grab some bench and listen to the game on headset.
Well, the thing with Sanchez is I would have done that a couple weeks ago. I really would have. I don't know why it's taken so long that the Jets... I mean, they looked, I don't care what anybody says, they came back, there was a lot of fight. They looked atrocious. And I continue to say that Bill Belichick is the league's biggest fake goon, because let me tell you, this guy who thinks that he's all rough and tough is nothing but a weasel. That guy is a weasel. Going for it, calling timeouts when they clearly have control of the game and they're up by a lot at that point, just to shove it down the Jets' throat. He does stuff like this all the time, and no one was happier when he blew that 4th-and-2 call. Nobody on the East Coast was happier than me. That guy is a jerk.
So Bill Belichick gets Joey's Jerk Store of the Week award. We should do that every week.
Yeah, the Jerk Store?
Yeah.
Well, the Jerk Store call, and then running out of you.
And I think that's a good way to end the second segment here on Off the Wall. When we come back, more nonsense with Joey and I. It's on the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. We're back right after this.
Want to see what everyone's talking about? Check out the 2-time Emmy Award-winning video content at YesNetwork.com. It's the best in Yankees web shows, podcasts, and features. Only at YesNetwork.com.
Want to have your voice heard? Leave a comment or question on the Yankees and anything else sports related for Chris at 646-487-3668.
And welcome back to the Off the Wall podcast for our third and final segment. It's sad every time we do this, and I don't think we've said it yet, but Joe and I both want to wish everybody out there who listens to the Off the Wall podcast, even the people who don't, a very happy Thanksgiving. We hope you enjoy your tryptophan and red wine and take long naps like I plan to on Thanksgiving. But Joe, if you have anything to say on Thanksgiving, I'll let you do that now, and then you could segue into our next topic from that. Good luck. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, just have a happy and healthy Thanksgiving. I know, just be careful. It's a holiday, which, you know, there are a lot of crazies out on the road.
Turkey Eve especially.
Turkey Eve and Turkey Night, you know, traveling everywhere. So just if you are, you know, making a trek somewhere via car, just be careful.
Just be safe. Absolutely.
Be safe. And with that, let's talk some Yankees Hot Stove. I know we didn't last week on the Off the Wall podcast, but we have a new show in the ilk of Yankees Hot Stove, Yankees Rumor Mill. We've done it before. We do it at trade deadline, but we are debuting December 1st, and it will be every Tuesday after that. So we're going to have a different panel of guests along with my friend Chris Sheeran, who
Hi.
Will host, and we're going to talk some Yankees rumors, which, you know, the stove's been a little bit cold. Cashman said that he was going to meet with his Tampa contingent and, you know, the rest of the Yankees front office on what they plan on doing for this offseason after their 27th World Championship. Will they go after John Lackey? What will they do with relievers? What will they do via bats, left field especially? And the only thing I can do right now is just kind of talk conjecture and rumor and stuff that we've been hearing. Chris, one thing that Cashman has said, we're going to start with relievers. One thing that really I think the Yankees want to bolster in the offseason, they think that they could get better. I love Dave Robertson in the bullpen. I think he should stay there. I like, you know, Mariano Rivera. I still think that one of the two guys in Jabba Chamberlain and Phil Hughes is going to be in the bullpen, and one of them is going to be starting, because I ultimately think the Yankees are going to sign a free agent pitcher or make a trade for a pitcher, a starting pitcher. So I think in that respect, that's okay. But you look at Marte is now a left-handed option. They do have Phil Koch. But rumor has it that they're interested in the two guys down in Atlanta. They've always had their eye on Mike Gonzalez as a left-handed specialist, and they've always had their eye on Rafael Soriano. Two really good relievers who could make an impact. Gonzalez is a type A. Soriano's had his troubles, but you never know. He could come around and be the pitcher that he was for Seattle a couple years back. Two guys that the Yankees are interested in. And Jose Valverde, Brandon Lyon, other names that we're hearing. And, you know, you never know. The Yankees could do something and sign somebody else. But with these relievers, it's a crapshoot, Chris.
What about Johnny Damon in left field? What do you think the Yankees will do there?
Johnny Damon is kind of, he kind of showed his hand a little bit during the season where he said, I want to be a Yankee, I want to be a Yankee, I want to be a Yankee. And then, you know, in the offseason, he works with Scott Boras, continues to show his hand a little bit, and now all of a sudden he's on the, I think he's kind of coming around to the Boras way of thinking, where he's saying, you know, I'm not going to give the Yankees a hometown discount. Well, that's not going to fly here. Next thing we're hearing is that, you know, he might be looking for Abreu money, which, if that's the case, well, the Yankees could sign him then. It's a 2-year, $19 million deal. That's definitely in the Yankees' range to sign Johnny Damon. I ultimately think he's coming back. I think he's going to be in left
field. I think in the playoffs this year, I think he earned the right to come back. But he didn't earn the right to basically, you know, pick up the Yankees' coffers and put them on his back. I mean, he's got to understand that at certain times during the season, he needed a rest. And the Yankees, you know, I don't think they're really going to throw a ton of money at a guy who's in his late 30s.
36, yeah.
And on opening day, I believe he'll be 37.
Mm-hmm.
So, and listen, I know what he's meant to this team. I know what he meant to this team in this postseason. But, you know, when you try to say, well, Jorge Posada got the contract. Derek Jeter got the contract. These are lifelong Yankees. We've said this before. I'm not breaking any news here. You can't use those guys as examples when you're trying to get your free agent who's been pretty much with Kansas City, Oakland, the Red Sox.
Every free agent here, he's switched teams.
Right. So, I mean, you got to give your players that have been loyal to you and loyal to your franchise. I have no problem with what the Yankees gave Posada. He should have been rewarded for all his hard work. Jeter should be rewarded when his contract is up for all his hard work and what he's meant to this team. Derek Jeter is to the Yankees what Babe Ruth is to the Yankees. You know, he's just a number off. The importance of his presence with this team since 1995 when he got a cup of coffee in 96 when Tony Fernandez got hurt and he became the everyday shortstop. Look at the stands. Look at everyone with Derek Jeter shirts and jerseys. This guy is the franchise. So if anyone ever brings his name up, well, Derek Jeter got this. Well, duh. Yeah, he's Derek Jeter, everybody. Do I think they should bring Damon back? Yes. Do I think he should be able to, you know, get a ridiculous amount of money to come back or more than a two-year deal to come back? No.
2 years is the absolute limit the Yankees should give this guy. He's also saying now, he's kind of changing his tune, he's waffling, saying that, you know, if a team comes in with more years, he's not going to, you know, he might take a two-year deal with the Yankees, but then it's got to be for more money. And that's just ludicrous.
Listen,
Yankees won't do that.
I know Johnny's just trying to look out for himself. He knows he's at the end of his rope in the major leagues. I mean, he could play another 3 years, 4 years easy, and he could be productive. But the way the Yankees are going, they want to get younger, and if they want to bring him back for another year or two, he's a great guy to have in the clubhouse, a great guy for us, always says yes to interviews, always helps us out, just a tremendous guy. But he's got to, you know, if he wants to stay here, he's got to see the bigger picture. If he wants maybe one or two more World Series rings, he's got to see the bigger picture.
And, you know, now we're going to just kind of look at the starting pitching. I think this Andy Pettit thing is going to get dragged out a little bit like it was last year. But ultimately, you have to think that he's not going to retire. He's going to come back. I know the Yankees have had their problems with the Hendricks in previous years, Pettit's agent. But I think he's going to be a Yankee. And I think the Yankees are going to start to look at guys like Joel Piñeiro and Jason Marquis as a possible number four and have Hughes or Chamberlain be a five. But again, would it shock you if they went out and got John Lackey?
No.
No.
Not at all.
Wouldn't.
Nothing should shock
you. Would it shock you if they were in the Roy Halladay sweepstakes and made a trade for this guy? No. No, it wouldn't. It would not shock you. So the Yankees are going to be involved in a lot of rumors and a lot of talk, and that's where our show, Yankees Rumor Mill, comes in, and that's where Yankees Hot Stove comes in, because we're going to be covering it for the rest of the offseason.
Just one more time so everybody doesn't forget, so they write it down. Get a pen and a piece of paper. We'll wait. When does Yankee Rumor Mill premiere?
Yankee Rumor Mill will premiere. We're going to basically have it and shoot it mid-afternoon on Tuesday, and it will be up Tuesday evening for everybody to enjoy and watch.
And there you go. And these are experts we're bringing in. I mean, these aren't your regular average Joes. These are guys who are with the team and they know what's going on and they're behind the scenes. So you want to listen to this.
Our second week, we're going to have the River Ave Blues guys come in. And they're all over it. I mean, those guys, I don't know if you've seen on riveravblues.com, they have been all over the Yankees offseason so far. So they've been great too.
All right, Joey, I think that's about going to wrap it up for this edition of Off the Wall, the podcast turkey version of this one. Thank you for that. When we come back next week, hopefully we're talking about the Giants being 7-4. The one thing that I'm scared of the next time we talk is that the Mets. Yeah. Well, close enough.
Hey-o.
The Nets might be 0-17 or worse the next time we talk to you. They wrap up their West Coast trip with the Lakers on Sunday, and then they're home to Dallas the next time we tape this podcast next Wednesday. So the Nets might have actually, the next time we tape this, might have tied the 88-89 Heat and the 98-99 Clippers for the worst start in NBA history.
I'm not going to say this because it's pretty bad. But you know what? If they do that, it's epic. It's epic. That's a story. That's going to want to make people come to the Yes Network and continue to watch this team lose. Do they get extra lottery balls for going 0-82?
I don't think so.
Oh.
Just to not make light of it, I gotta also add in there when we talk about the Nets, listen. Lawrence Frank wasn't happy with the effort in Denver, but before the Denver game, it's not like this team lacks hustle, lacks fire.
Bunch of good guys.
It's hard not to root for. I grew up a Knicks fan, and it's hard not to root for the Nets. And I know that might sound like, you know, somebody being idiotic from this, but when you're around these guys and you're around the kind of men they are and how they lay it on the table, there's no way on God's green earth, if you were a competitor in your life at anything and you meet Chris Douglas Roberts and you see how he is and you hear how he reacts after this team loses and how he takes it personally, there's no way you can't root for guys like this. And for Lawrence Frank and all those guys on this team, you know what? I hope it ends, if not against Portland, then against Sacramento or against the Lakers. Maybe, you know, somehow they scrape together a win out in L.A. And that would be a pretty big win for them, I would say, if they were able to end this losing streak against the Lakers, if not against the Kings. You know what? Good for them. I hope it ends soon. If it doesn't end on the West Coast, it'll have to end at the beginning of December back in the swamp on December 2nd against the Mavericks or December 4th.
And then we can officially say
against the Bobcats.
It was in November.
Yeah, we could officially do that. I won't jump on that bandwagon because
I know. I'm just being a jerk right now. I'm sorry.
I feel for those guys and I feel for their plight. It's not like they're just laying down on the floor. They're not.
Right.
They bring it every
night.
No,
they are. They're playing their butts off.
They bring it every night and hopefully soon they get their first W. Okay, for Joe Auriemma, I'm Chris Sheeran. Once again, have a very happy and healthy Thanksgiving. And we will see you next week here on the Off the Wall podcast on YesNetwork.com. Take care, everybody.